You take a sound, any sound, record it, and then change its nature by a multiplicity of operations. You record it at different speeds, you play it backwards, you add it to itself over and over again. You adjust filters, echoes, acoustic qualities. You combine segments of magnetic tape. By these means and many others, you can create sounds which no one has ever heard before.
And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. And this day shall be unto you a memorial, and ye shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. Ye shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. Hello and good evening. Happy Passover. I am William Morgan, and you are listening to 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day. You can find us online at 42minutes.com, and you can reach us by sending a message to mail at 42minutes.com. You can also follow our tweets at Sync42 and at SyncBook. Be sure and like us on Facebook so you can stay in the loop on all that is going on, which, come to find out lately, is a lot. Yet, perhaps this evening's Blood Moon bonus guest can shed some light on what's been going on in the Sync community.
Actually, Passover and Easter are holidays that move together in sync. They both connect and align the sun, moon, and earth. But alignment, there's been a lot of that lately, especially considering tonight's lunar eclipse, and that's why we're doing an impromptu bonus 42 minutes with author and tone color alchemist Ezra Sanzerbell and SyncBook Press managing editor Alan Green. It's going to be an exciting summer, so be sure to make available the weekend of August 8th and 9th as another incredible convergence of souls, minds, and bodies. We'll get into that shortly, but first let's highlight some of the recent work of SyncBook Press. Last January, the Yogic Gospel of Thomas began shipping, and this is a big, beautiful book. Will and I have been digging into our copies and are eager to do the Yogic 42 Minutes on May 6th. We urge you to read along with us and send us your questions for the author. Last week, another SyncBook Press title quietly began shipping. This one by our friend Ezra Sanzerbell, who we first met in episode 38 and then later in episode 68 to speak about his chapter in SyncBook 2. We're very excited to dig into this one. It looks fabulous, and we're happy both these gentlemen could be with us tonight on such a short notice. Hey guys, how are you guys doing, and do you have your alarms set?
I haven't set my alarm, but I most certainly could.
I'm talking about the eclipse tonight. Are you gonna get up and go look at it?
I don't know. I have to be at work at 6:30 in the morning, so probably not.
Probably not.
Well, I have to be to work early too, but I'm gonna give it a shot. You know, right. 5 minutes. I'll wake up, see it.
It's supposed to last like an hour, though, isn't it?
It takes a while for the moon to eclipse.
It's quite a while for a peak. Like we were just talking before the show started, though, man, it's kind of weird. It's kind of just hitting me now. I'm just starting to think about it being Passover, the first full moon after the vernal equinox, and it's going to be red, like as if scripted for Passover.
Yeah,
I'm going to give myself permission to just reassociate here. As a tone color alchemist, one of the things I'm constantly doing is just free associating between various symbols through different semantic contexts. So the color red corresponds to a couple of different signs astrologically, two planets and one sign. And so right now we're in the age of Aries, or I should say we're in the month of Aries. The age of Aries was the period of time during which the Jewish people really started getting their message out there, which is why a lot of times the idea of Jews having horns or just the idea of blowing the shofar or the ram's horn to celebrate high holidays like Yom Kippur. So anyway, Aries in the tone color alchemy system corresponds to the color red. And interestingly enough, the idea of Passover is that there's the slaughtering of the ram and the spreading of the blood over the door frame. So there's something in that.
Well, here's something else. Mars will make its closest approach to Earth since 2008 tonight.
Is this like a...
we have some kind of... This is a
moment of war? Is this kind of...
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't know about that. But you mentioned earlier also that, you know, Easter's going to fall on 420. Is there significance in that, you think?
Again, a lot of the significance for me in this is going to be personal. So, for example, I was born in the year of the rabbit. I have a close connection with the rabbit, just the image of following the rabbit or going down the rabbit hole or chasing after synchronicity. There's an element of solipsism in that. You're really chasing after symbols that are unique to you, special to you, important to you. And one of the things I try and get across in the book is that even though these correspondences are fixed within the context of the book, you know, I'm not trying to create some sort of dogma or reinforce any religious sort of asphyxiation. I want people to be able to choose whatever symbolic correspondences to musical notes that they would really most benefit from or resonate with. So in that way, you know, I like to keep things kind of agnostic and relativistic. But for the purposes of the book, I try to stick within this select framework. So what I like to do is take a combination of these fixed associations combined with synchronicities that occur in my own life and the ways that I perceive things happening in the outside world. So this is really a method of turning on these modes of awareness, these synchronistic ways of seeing the world and bringing them into the world of music. Because the idea is that sound is a carrier vessel for consciousness. So the name of the book is Astro Music, and it just came out a few days ago. So the purpose of the book is really to fuse the idea of astrology and alchemy and ritual magic in the Western Hermetic tradition with the Western canon of music. I started my journey probably about 7 or 8 years ago with music, trying to understand why it was that music was affecting me in the way that it did. I was studying music theory in college, and I went through their whole curriculum, and essentially I got through the anatomy of music, the grammar of it. I understood how to form musical sentences, so to speak, but I was having a deep personal experience of music that wasn't represented in the structures that were being presented to me. So, you know, I started looking to see what I could find in the world of Western literature that spoke to that, and there really wasn't much. The closest thing I found was Adam McLean's website, which is alchemywebsite.com. And that was one of the first things that popped up on my radar, where I realized that in Hellenistic astrology, basically in Greek astrology, there were 7 planets, that being the sun, the moon, and then Mercury, Mars, Venus, Jupiter, and Saturn. So that for me corresponded to the idea of 7 notes in a musical scale, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti. And so that was the first inkling I had that there was some sort of connection between the mysteries of the stars, the mysteries of the heavens, and the mysteries of my experience of music.
And thus Astro Music.
And thus Astro Music, precisely.
Okay. And this is available now. You can get it on Amazon. You can find details at thesyncbook.com. Is this something that grew out of your chapter on the sync book, or something much bigger than that scope was?
Yeah, it started long before that. Probably the earliest work that I did in the public sphere was on Red Ice Creations and on A Cult of Personality. I did a couple interviews when I was first discovering, this was about 2 years into my research, I had found Paul Foster Case, and his work, he was a classical composer living in New York City who was introduced to the tarot, and he started going down his own rabbit holes. And then keep in mind, this was, I don't want to get the date wrong, but I believe the 20s, he published a book called Correspondences of Sound and Color somewhere in the 30s. So he's definitely like early 20th century composer who got into the Hermetic tradition and was associated with the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. He was actually an initiate of the Hermes Thoth Lodge, which was in New York City at the time. So he was privy to a lot of inside information about the magical correspondences they were doing for the invocation of angels in a ritual context. And I imagine there's really not much documentation about what was going on for him. There's no biographies on him. He doesn't seem to have any sort of journals or any personal diaries that were left behind. So there's very little information about what was really going on in his head and why he chose the path that he did. But from what I've understood, he more or less abandoned his work as a composer to dedicate himself completely to ritual magic and the creation of the tarot deck that is now a centerpiece of his own magical lodge called the Builders of the Adytum, or the BOTA. And so the story of Paul Case, he moved out from New York City to LA to start his temple, and they still have a BOTA lodge that's active there today. I think they have one in Seattle as well. And Paul Case's influence on ritual magic in the Western world is usually, it's understated, but there's a lot of other groups, Ordo Templi Orientis comes to mind, that's a little more visible just because of the affiliation with Crowley. And they're definitely incorporating his tone color attributions into their system, though a lot of times you don't hear him getting credit by name. So anyway, that's just sort of a peripheral glance. But when I first started getting into this stuff, I was discovering Paul Foster Case's work, and it was turning me on. I was realizing that he had corresponded tone and color to astrology, and not only astrology, but also alchemy and the 22 cards of the major arcana in the tarot. So that just opened up a bunch of doors for me. I didn't know anything about tarot or astrology, and I started studying that stuff with the hope that it would eventually lead me to a deeper understanding of what was going on in music, which in some ways it did, and in a lot of ways it didn't.
Do you think on some level this work makes normal music more meaningful? Does it like show an invisible world underneath it, and that, you know, where the emotion comes from, or is it a whole nother realm?
Yeah, I think it's a whole nother realm. I think what it does is it speaks to the idea that when you're reading a text, you can take a surface reading of the text, but there's typically several deeper layers to what you're reading. And in music, that's definitely the case. There's one of the first chapters in the book, I talk about the mimetic transference of consciousness through music. And basically what I'm saying is that the composer encodes and sort of engrammatizes their own consciousness into the sound forms that they propagate through their music. So, you know, when you're looking at something like the tone color alchemy system, where every musical tone corresponds to a color. For example, you know, the musical note C corresponds to red, which corresponds to the planet Mars and the sign Aries and also the planet Pluto. And there's Hebrew letters that go along with that, and each one of the Hebrew letters have numbers. What you start to see is there's a matrix of interconnected symbolism. And though it doesn't actually immediately illuminate the reasons that music has an effect upon us, I think it speaks symbolically to that. And so I'm still really in the process of trying to find language for why it is that music has the effect that it does. I think one of the first places to start is in an arena like this, where we're looking at multiple meanings of a semantic text.
Yeah. The highly symbolic compression of various mystical traditions.
Right. And that's what we're doing in synchromysticism, in a way. We're connecting these threads that seemingly are not affiliated with each other, there's a very musical process. It's one of the reasons that I got involved in synchromysticism was that if you think about, let's say, for example, you guys familiar with it, there's a famous document out there that links Kennedy and Lincoln to one another.
Yeah.
You know, before you go further, you know that today is the day that Lincoln was shot, don't you?
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, today, April 4th, the 14th, he was shot. The 15th, he dies.
Huh.
Go ahead. As you were saying,
Bang.
Beautiful. Well, one of the things that I'm trying to get at is in that text, you can see they're using things like the number of letters in each of these presidents' names or the names of their secretaries, et cetera. Maybe we can link up to that in the show notes. But the idea of that is that there's some sort of common theme between the two. And the way I like to think of that musically is if you're creating a chord, you choose three notes. Let's say the most basic chord would be a C major chord. So the musical notes would be C, E, and G. Basically, what I'm saying is that the common interval between C and G is the musical note E. It's right in the middle between them. And so they share that. There is an interval of space between C and G, but there's also an interval between C to E and from E to G. And the three of those notes played in concert, they create something that is unique. They create something greater than the sum of its parts. If you just play one note individually, whether it's C or E or G, it doesn't convey the same sonority, the same feeling that the full major scale or major chord would. And so that's really what I was trying to get at in my early work with Steve Wilner and the whole synchromusicology theme, was that basically consciousness has a musical quality. Synchromysticism is pointing at the sort of quanter interdependence of consciousness with the seemingly external reality that we're all interfacing with. And so, you know, therefore, our perceptions are musical. And it's kind of loaded, but
no, it's super loaded.
I could just totally visualize you. I mean, this is all audio that I'm hearing, but you make this wonderful point, and then you're like, time for coffee.
Oh, I'm imagining tea. There's got to be a tea drinker.
This is like ginger. Yeah.
Ah, yes. Touche, Bowles.
Well, I wrote the name Pythagoras down, and I started thinking about vibration. And so, like, at the core of this, that might be what it is. It's flow through vibration. And so you were talking about C, E, and G, and this is a chord. It's the first, the third, and the fifth of a scale. And that somehow these different notes have resonances with each other that vibrate in concert with one another. Mm-hmm. So it's a curiosity.
Music of the spheres. I'm getting freaked out now, just especially because what's going on, like,
above you?
Yeah.
We've got a grand cross coming up on the 21st, 22nd, and that's actually when the books are arriving. So it's there's definitely some sort of astrological synchronicity happening around this book.
Talk about the cover a little bit. This looks – it's peculiar and beautiful and enigmatic.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, the artwork was done by my friend Danlin Brennan. Curiously enough, her birthday was April 12th. Just 2 days ago.
Wow.
And so she's an Aries.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's an element. She really infused her own energy into this book. And yeah, so, I mean, I could say a lot about that, but...
Well, I'm really curious about some of the details behind the figure's head. They're like V's and A's and D's and things.
Right.
Does that... Can you unpack that a little bit?
I mean, I wouldn't have much to say. I really, the cover of the book itself, I was hanging out with her and we were, you know, she was there for a lot of the process of writing the book. I'd be sharing my notes with her. I was writing every day. And when I'd come home at the end of the day, we'd be hanging out and I'd be showing her the stuff and she'd be offering reflection and feedback. And about three quarters of the way into the book, we were just hanging out one day and I was looking at her artwork and I saw this and it just leaped off the page. I knew immediately I wanted this to be the cover of the book. And she agreed to it. So that, you know, that's really that's the story behind it. As far as the symbols, I see them just as these abstract, these geometric shapes that are the closest to the head. In other words, that there's almost these orders of magnitude, like from these abstract geometries, leading out to the sphere of music, leading out into these sort of mathematical, rational, abstract representations. And beyond that is just the endless expanse of sky.
And so tell us, how does this read? Is it Don't laugh at me, Will. I'm just curious.
Man, I'm like over here tripping right now. I can't deal with what he just said.
Is someone who, a norm is what I call him. When Norm gets a hold of the book, is it going to be hard for him to get through, or is it written for someone with very little background?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to be nonlinear and jump around, so sorry if there's some overwhelm here. But yeah, I mean, I try to be a little more linear in the way I laid out the book. Table of contents, kind of, I start off with a little introduction about music, mythology, and magic. My first chapter is on acoustic mimetics, so I instead of just jumping straight into these correspondence tables, I just start by talking about human consciousness and how it moves through sound. Right now we're having a conversation on this podcast, and I'm wanting to communicate certain thought forms to you. So the way I'm doing that is by making sounds with my mouth. Terence McKenna made a great point about this, that it's almost like we're these telepathic beings, and we just make these primitive sort of grunts and clicks with our mouth in order to try to get the, get the signal across to each other.
And, you know, I think I want to agree with that more and more, just because it seems like, because
you just enjoy grunting?
No. No, soccer season started last weekend, and we only had one practice, and I swear that my sheer will alone was getting these kids to do what I wanted them to. Like, I'm screaming on the sidelines like Kermit the Frog and waving my arms. I don't know how that translates into, yes, I will get right in front of the goal and kick this in.
But it just makes me think of like a conductor in an orchestra. You know, it's a perfect example. The second part of this first chapter, I talk about the role of the conductor in the orchestra, where he's really, I mean, he's essentially like this wizard who's just waving a magic wand. He's not doing much of anything. But the idea symbolically is that his will is conducting the symphony. It's keeping everything together.
They are the instrument. He's the musician.
Right. I mean, it's like a puppet master, but the strings are invisible.
Yeah. Have you played with an orchestra before?
I did. I actually started my musical training with the cello. I was in youth symphony orchestra for about 5 years before I changed over to bass guitar and eventually guitar.
Yeah. I never had that. I was always envious of the band kids, just because it seemed like there was a community there. Like the guitar is an instrument that is kind of like encompassing, or the piano also, where it is, it's its own community. But at the same time, it would be fun to be part of something so much larger, creating a wholeness.
I mean, I've got to say that I look back on those times and I feel on the one hand, it was great for training. And I mean, it definitely brought some structure to my practice and to a feeling of community and belonging. But really where I got the most satisfaction was when I changed over to bass guitar and I started playing in a band. I moved to Chicago back in 2001. And around 2002, I started up a band with some friends and we played for about 5 years. It was called Piglet and it was an instrumental band. we actually just recently re-released our vinyl. We did a Kickstarter and got all the funding we needed. So we pressed 1,000 vinyl, and it's circulating out there. We can provide that in the notes as well. But basically, that band, you know, we were going on tour, we were putting out records, we were printing shirts. It was much more like part of this sort of DIY culture, and I felt a lot more connected to community through that. I think because there was no dictator, there was no conductor. We were, each person is just responsible for playing their piece and maintaining the integrity of the collective field.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
dig it, man.
No, I'm just thinking about how you can conduct experiments where it's the same thing, where the conductor is everyone somehow together.
I used to have a friend who was in a drum circle, and they always made this comment about how you just found yourself not realizing that you were part of this beat. It was like this enormous breathing creature. Do you know what I mean? Where everybody had their little sound that they were doing repetitively, but it became something else. And I can't help but think about that now. as far as like not having a conductor and being like this own entity that just spontaneously, arrives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So flow or whatever you want to call it. I mean, just from the spontaneity of the moment.
It just brings up that idea of Steve Wilner and I were creating some videos back in the day that were probably like my most direct contribution to the synchromysticism community. And one of our videos, we were showing the connection between cymatic technology and concerts, and how, so at a rock concert, you've got, you know, sort of the waveforms are coming off the stage, but it manifests as these as like mosh pits and like crowd surfing, and just right. There's almost like this ocean of human forms in the audience.
Concerts they're so funny too, because we're so concerned with our boundaries in normal life, but then we let go of those boundaries and all press up against the stage to have this experience together.
If I may jump in here, when you were talking before about this sort of primitive communication and our grunts and whatnot, and this has obviously been an undercurrent of magic ritual here, I can't help but think, I don't know how many of you have seen a documentary about Alan Moore. He's a comic book author and ritual magician. It's a documentary called The Mindscape of Alan Moore. I highly recommend it if anyone hasn't watched it. And there's a part in there where he's talking about monotheism versus a sort of pantheism and a magical way of thinking about deities and gods and whatnot. And he says, you know, monotheism is, and the idea of like an amen and all these sorts of things, where there is something to this unitive sound, and at the same time he takes it down to that's basically the most primitive grunt, whereas introducing other shades of gray and different a different fuller spectrum, you can have a full song and you can have a full range of sounds. And I can't help but think one of the things I'm really proud about Ezra and a lot of people in this community, Doug and Will included in this, is that we started off sort of as a community all exploring something, and we all had our different flavors and whatnot, but I feel like everyone's sort of finding their voice more and more and exploring their own territory more and more and getting to sing their song and getting to do what, you know, sing something a lot more unique and a lot more thought out. And it's just it's a real privilege for me to observe and participate in.
Well, what I wrote down moments ago as Ezra was talking about how the various elements, mystical elements, converged before him, and that fascinated him. He's talking about music's relationships to the stars and the Hebrew letters and tarot, and the name I wrote down was Marty Leeds, and I was thinking, what would it be like to get Marty Leeds and Ezra in the same room?
Right. He, I think I've seen his work. Isn't he into like alphabet magic or something?
Yeah, and it's fabulous. He really does a real nice job of, you know, it's that consciousness that you were talking about. Somehow the distillation of everything out there into matter. Why should I be really excited about this, Alan?
Because they are going to be together. They're going to be together August 8th and 9th in Olympia at the Olympia Sync Summit. This is an event that's coming together. We have a bunch of people will be joining us, and Ezra and Marty are both going to be there. They'll both be participating in this event, along with a bunch of other people like Rodney Asher, director of Room 237, Joe Alexander, who's been on 42 Minutes a bunch of times, does all those great sync films, a lot of them having to do with Back to the Future. Oh, God, I'm going to be terrible at missing people's names here. We got
Well, just start with, where did the idea come from?
Yeah, let's just start with mentioning Doug's most obvious segue ever.
Why do you and Andras want to do... What is this, just the natural growth of the next step?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, we did what, you know, I know obviously the Gators, the sinkhole community, they do their gatherings up in Winnipeg. And we did our own sort of variation on that. I think it was something very different, but I guess there, I know for you, Doug, you had gone to one of their events, so I sort of relate to it via you, vicariously through you. And we did, what was that, 2011? We did, just as we were putting out the sync book, a bunch of us got together.
That was like an editing party.
Kind of, yeah. But
and a celebration, too, though. So it was like, we called it Sync Cabin, and it was the small, tight community coming together.
Right, and I think putting all those people in a room together, in a few rooms, but in a cabin together for a few days, all of us being in person and getting to share that space, I mean, that was high magic for me. You know, I don't know what else you'd call that. It was a really fascinating, fun experience. It wasn't like we were sitting around in robes and, you know, exchanging secret passwords and handshakes. It was like a bunch of, you know, in one respect, it's a bunch of dorks getting together talking about the things that they're most passionate about. But
it was in nature, which was in that river and the trees, and that's what made it fabulous for me.
Yeah, it was just such a wonderful experience that I've wanted to keep kind of revisiting that. So we've done that. We went to Boise, right? We did another cabin in Boise where Steve Wilner and David Plate joined us, and you know, so many people. And again, I'm going to be hard.
But so those are the informal gatherings, and then the formal gathering in 2011 January, I think it was. There was the New York production.
Correct. Right. I think that was actually January 2012.
I think
you're
right.
Yeah, it was the first attempt at sort of doing something where let's open this up to the public and put on a kind of show for them. And for that was like, okay, everybody gets kind of about 10 minutes and let's kind of keep switching it up. So we had you reading a piece from your book. We had Rammer Martinez doing some poetry. We had my wife dancing. Then you also had Andras doing Radio 8 Ball segments. You had Andras Jones, the host of Radio 8 Ball, who's going to be hosting this event with me.
He did Peg Carter do a great talk. You had Kevin Halcott doing something amazing.
Jen
Kevin
Palmer.
Halcott. Yeah.
Kevin
yeah.
Halcott showed
up. And so this, what you're doing this Jen summer Palmer. Is the next step, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's trying to mesh some, like, sort of all of these ideas together where, hey, we can put on a great show and have people do presentations and show films and do this and do this. But hey, what if we all shared a house together for a few days while we did it?
The real sink?
Right. So Andras's idea was to basically rent out a bed and breakfast for a few days and have everybody stay in it, including we're doing this Indiegogo campaign to raise some extra funds for this event, to just fly out our presenters and give them lodging in this bed and breakfast. But 12 lucky people who want to put up the money.
So I want to be in that. How do I get in there? How much does it cost me?
$300. That gives you lodging for 2 days. It gives you breakfast at the place, and it also gives you your ticket to 2 days of events. And if we end up doing a Sunday event, it would give you a ticket to that as well. Basically, you get a place to stay, you get meals, you get tickets to all the events, and you get to...
And then who am I staying with?
Scott Onstott, Marty Weeds, Ezra Sanzerbell, myself, Alan Abadesa-Green, Andras Jones.
Is Will Morgan going to be there?
You know, that's what I hear. Will Morgan, that guy from 42 Minutes, I hear, is going to be there.
He is such a rock
well.
Star these days.
Pass.
I know. I want to. I got to chill with Will Morgan a month or two ago, and that was – he's a wonderful man in person. So he's not as much of an asshole as he comes across on the radio.
I'm glad you say that.
I really look forward to seeing him again. And Ezra, I've spoken to you how many times? Ezra, I've never met you in person, so I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm guessing there'll be copies of Astro Music to purchase and probably get signed by the author there?
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
I just want to throw in there that earlier, I'm not sure if it was Douglas or William's comment about the drumming, but I got a text message from a friend asking me if I wanted to come join them in a drum circle tonight on the mountain. I've never been
Someone
in a drum circle
ask
with them.
If you're a god, you say yes.
What did you say?
I haven't responded yet. I was just listening to you guys talk. I didn't want to be distracted, but
that's curious. I mean, have you ever gone to a drum circle? You said no, right?
No, I haven't. This is just totally out of the blue.
Tell me a cool shit happened.
Out of the red, I should say.
It
out
is.
Of the red.
There's something else. There's another sink in here. Ezra and I did not plan this. If for listeners of Always Record, you know that I've been working on a film version of Suicide Kings, my book, and I've been working on a sort of film adaptation, a serialized version of that. And what I've done is I've used the Lincoln-Kennedy coincidences as the framework. Basically, Ezra, as I heard you talking about it, it's like, yeah, we obviously think the same way. It's like, I feel like that's such a great touchstone because it's the real first modern example of people noticing these coincidences, and it just, I don't know, it's just this perfect sort of setting up point of saying, look, you can get this. You know about Abraham Lincoln and JFK. They're historical figures for us, particularly as Americans. We know that there's some coincidences there. Using that as the seed and stepping out from that. So I actually have been working on this film, and I focused the first few minutes on the Lincoln-Kennedy coincidences. I've already got that part done, and as long as some extra. And what I am planning on doing is at this event in August, I plan on premiering the film that I'm working on.
Oh,
so that's something.
That's when we'll see it. That's awesome. I didn't realize that. So that's
I just
when you're
love
planning
that,
on releasing it.
Yeah, Ezra, I just love that you mentioned that, because that was – I'm sitting here – you know, on mute going, oh my God, I can't believe you just mentioned that.
So. Well, this is one of the most interesting things. One of the things that brings me beyond the whole like musical coincidences or like ritual magic. And it's just, yeah, there's actually this field of consciousness that we're all sharing. Like we're having this mass shared dream. And so, you know, it's not even like earlier somebody made some quip about, oh, if somebody asks you if you're a god, say yes. You know, yeah, at some level, at the absolute level, that's true, but it's almost like we're like cells in an organism, and I feel like what synchromysticism is doing is it's actually making our boundaries more permeable so that we're just more receptive. It's almost like we're inducing a higher degree or higher frequency of synchronicity, and really I think that's just an expression of there's a greater degree of almost like the psychic transference happening between us and the seemingly outside world.
Yeah, and I think the importance of music, Doug, you asked about as a layman. I mean, I'm probably the only one in this conversation besides Ezra who wrote it that's read Ezra's book. And yeah, I mean, there's some things that I think someone with a musical background will be able to appreciate a lot more. But I think the real importance, and even what I was able to really grasp from this, is that, you know, we talk about, oh, this is, say, a synchromysticism conversation. Oh, Jim Carrey resonates with Osiris or the Fool or blah, blah, blah. When we say resonates, right, what are we really talking about? Like, it's a term that gets tossed around so much, but there's undoubtedly this musical component to that, right? We're talking about a resonance.
Totally. And the word resonance tends to come from the idea of a bell. Which just semantically it comes, you know, comes from the word Baal, which means Lord. It's a Semitic word. And so really, like, the idea of resonance has to do with the ringing of a bell. I make some jokes about that in the music theory section, just the idea of a ring. You can follow the logic, basically, that the base of a bell, that the ring around the outside of it is a circular shape. And basically what I do is I trace back the whole tone color alchemy system to the tree of life in the Kabbalistic system of magic. And I trace that to the flower of life, which is it's a geometric shape. It's two-dimensional interlocking circles. And you can actually trace that to the seed of life, which is six circles around one circle in the center, representing the 7 days of creation. we trace them all the way back to the first circle, you have the original sound, the original word of God, which is the original resonance. That is the Lord. Baal, the bell.
Alan, give us some more details about the event.
I was just trying to pull it up. Well, here's what I'm going to ask people to do. If you're listening,
I want to find out more information. Where do I go?
Yeah, exactly. Go to thesyncbook.com. I have it on the very front page. You'll find your link. Or if you're willing to type in a few more characters, go to thesyncbook.com/OLY2014. And that will pull up our page. I'll make sure to put all our updates there. It has a link to the Indiegogo campaign. Here's something that'll never get mentioned anywhere else is in this Indiegogo campaign. I mean, this is a video that I put together in between working crazy shifts at work and trying to put this all together very last minute. And yet, I feel like this video came together really well. I want to thank Andras for writing the script, my wife for filming me in this park, and myself for having fun with this new video editing program and getting to make something really interesting and do some fun animation and really just have some fun with it. So
there's actual Alan footage, huh?
Yeah, but you know, please don't pay too much attention to that because the most regretful thing for me is that I actually got a haircut the following day and I was like, why didn't I film that after? But anyway.
Okay, so let's say I want to be there
in spirit.
Wait, sorry.
I just looking at the list now, and you know who didn't get mentioned? Michael Schacht from Gosporn, as well as James Evan Pilato from Media Monarchy. There's a huge people that I need to mention, and I'm so sorry that I missed them the first time.
I can't be there. Let's say I want to be there in spirit. How can I support what you guys are doing? I believe in what you're doing. What can I do?
There are different perks that are not buying tickets. So I don't know if I explained this. What I wanted to do is a lot of Indiegogo campaigns like, hey, give us money and we'll give you like some other thing. What I wanted is, hey, look, you're going to want to come to this event. You can actually buy a ticket is your perk. It's like a pre-sale. We need some money up front, so buy your ticket in advance, and that is your reward is you get the ticket. Or you can buy the bigger ticket, and you can actually stay at the bed and breakfast. But, of course, for someone who can't come, there are other perks. You can get some e-books, and you get some fun stuff. And then Andras had this idea to do something called Dropbox 42, which I can't really say too much about except for – it's this really interesting idea to basically buy this server, this Dropbox, and stuff it full of the most interesting things that we can think of and stuff that you won't be able to get elsewhere. And if I say too much now, Andras will be pissed because we have this sort of game plan of how to kind of talk about this thing. But we want to make it really, really interesting. So there's
it is really interesting, but that was 42 minutes. Thank you for sharing it with us. You've been listening to Ezra and Alan on Syncbook Radio, a production of thesyncbook.com. More information about Astro Music and the Oli Sync Summit can be found at thesyncbook.com.
For more information about the Syncbook, our guests, to check out past shows or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at 42minutes.com.
If you like the podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode of the website. And did not write the final line, Will. You're going to have to wing it.
And consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and too warm.
That's last week.
Oh, you screwed me up, too.
Can I finish it up?
Please finish the...
Please, because we're dying here.
There is an additional... If you can't come to this event, if anything that we do over our $5,000 goal is going to go to filming it, producing podcasts and media, and recording as much of this weekend as possible. So if you want to, you enjoy our podcast, you enjoy what we do, please donate to the show or donate to the Indiegogo campaign. But please, we're trying to give you a ton of awesome stuff. Please support what we're doing if you enjoy it. Much love.
That was great. Thank you.
Awesome.